Hey, and welcome back to Basecamp, a podcast of all things, all people. This podcast serves as our base camp to debrief and discuss our venturing into the dark with the light of Christ and his good news. So glad that you're here. This week's episode is a phenomenal one. This is a conversation that I recorded with Brad Cooper, one of the lead pastors at New Spring Church in South Carolina, 14 campuses spread out all over the state of South Carolina. And the reason why I had Brad on, one, is that he and I have a bunch of mutual connections, a lot of mutual friends. We mentioned a couple in this episode. Actually, Brad and I go way back, and he didn't even know it. When I was a youth pastor, my first year as a youth pastor, Brad spoke at the camp that I brought my students to, and he and I had our first conversation in the bathroom of the hotel conference center that the camp was taking place at. So this is our second conversation since then. This one was much less awkward and much more fruitful. So I had Brad on because he is one of the lead pastors at one of the biggest churches in the United States. And, you know, some of you, I've already lost some of you because mega churches sometimes have a bad name. Sometimes they get a bad name undeservedly, and sometimes they earn it quite deservedly. And Brad's not one of those guys. New Spring's not one of those churches. They do a phenomenal job in the state of South Carolina ministering to what people don't really realize is a really varied group of cultures all over that state, just like every other state in our country. And Brad and the New Spring team have made huge efforts to minister well. And as you're going to hear it in our conversation, we talk about topics like ministering to a multi-generational congregation. How do you have boomers and Gen Z in the same room and preach the same gospel, without losing one group or without infuriating one group? Well, the answer, as you're going to find out from Brad, is that at times you infuriate both. And so we talk about the changing sexual ethic here in the Western world and even within Western Christianity. And how do we address that as ministers of the gospel? We talk about issues of race and multiculturalism that New Spring has faced head on. And so this episode is especially fruitful for not just for pastors, but for anybody who is looking to be an agent of change in a culture that is dramatically and quickly moving away from being gospel centered. And so I do want to tell you, you should send this episode to your pastor, because while I was listening back to it, this episode's actually this interview is actually kind of old. Brad and I recorded it in the spring, and I'm putting it out in September. As I was listening back to it, it was mostly new to me because it's been such a long time since we had the conversation. And I was texting the team that I work with at my church and just like sending them quotes and being like, you guys got to listen to this. And I don't really do that very often, even with the amazing guests and episodes that we've had. But this one just meant so much to me because Brad drops some serious wisdom on how to be a Christian in this world. And honestly, I think Brad's going to continue to become somebody that the church in the West looks at as a leader, not because he's the loudest, not because, you know, he has the largest platform. In fact, he shares his platform at New Spring with other lead pastors and a teaching team, which I greatly admire. My church does the same thing. But because he patiently addresses the topics that so many other Christian leaders shoot from the hip on. And you're gonna really benefit from this conversation, and I'm excited for you to hear it. I also want to invite you, if you don't already get the Exploration Society journal, the Exploration Society is essentially the missions organization within All Things All People, which is seeking to equip Christians to engage the darkest and most difficult places and groups of people with the gospel. And so the best way to be a part of that movement is the Exploration Society Journal. It goes out every other week on Wednesdays, and it's going to be delivered into your email inbox. We do our best to make it like the Christian National Geographic stories from the mission field stories from engaging people from other worldviews and religions, articles that address difficult questions, as well as featuring ATAP content. And so make sure to sign up for that. There's a link in the show notes for that. One thing that we're going to be featuring quite a bit in the next few weeks is on October 29th, here in my hometown of Forest City, North Carolina, not far from Brad's neck of the woods in the upstate of South Carolina. So if you're a New Spring person, I would love to see you in Forest City, North Carolina on October 29th for our Exploration Society fall lecture, which is with Dr. Joel Mutamale. Joel is the director of research and theology for Proverbs 31. He's a brilliant scholar, brilliant theologian, and he's going to come and speak at our fall lecture on the spiritual realm and cosmic geography. And after he's done, he and I are going to have a conversation with Q&A from the attendees. And so there's a link to purchase tickets. Tickets are only $10. We want to keep them cheap because we want people there. But they're going fast, and we only have 100 tickets because it's at Hope House Coffee, which is an amazing coffee shop in Forest City, North Carolina, and it's limited on space. And so I'd love for you to be there. And like I said, if you are listening to this because Brad's your pastor, or you are a New Spring person, or you love Brad, it's in all likelihood within driving distance. And so come hang out with us that night and go get your tickets now. But without further ado, I can't wait for you to hear this. And you're going to see why I said that you need to send this to your pastor, because this is going to be a great encouragement to anybody whose life is wrapped around the idea that I'm a heralder of the gospel, whether that's a pastor, a Sunday school leader, a small group leader, whatever you are, a missionary. This is going to minister to you. And so I need to cut to the chase, because the whole reason that you're listening to this episode is to hear this with Brad Cooper. Let's do it. Well, awesome. Well, on this episode of Basecamp, we're honored and privileged to have the lead pastor of culture and direction at New Spring, which, if you're not from my area and Brad's area, New Spring for the last 10, 15 years has been one of the largest churches in the United States, one of the fastest growing, certainly, and has really changed the face of my region, which is here in the southeast of the Carolinas, and specifically South Carolina, where since its beginning, New Spring has had a heart to reach everybody in the state of South Carolina with the gospel. And so today's guest is Brad Cooper, which, Brad, you and I just pre-show we're talking about. We have, it seems like, an endless list of connections and mutual friends, but this is an honor to have you on for our first real conversation, other than, like I mentioned, a brief conversation in a bathroom at a youth camp about 12 years ago.
Yeah, man. I'm honored to be here, Jeremy. Thank you. And it is pretty cool. God's been so kind. And there's some great folks in the Carolinas that love Jesus. And it seems like that you kind of bounce into folks that know everybody. So thanks for what you do, too, yeah, man. I know it's a labor of love, and you do a fantastic job. So I was honored to be invited to come and add value for this podcast.
Well, I really appreciate that. You know, I mentioned pre-show, and we'll talk just briefly about your background and history of how you've gotten here, you know, but for those who are listening who aren't familiar, and reasonably so, I mean, I think for me and for Brad, mega churches, for pastors, for people who work in church ministry, a lot of times big churches, mega churches, whatever you want to call it, really do take up quite a bit of the conversation of, like, trendsetters and all that. I know not a lot of people get wrapped up in that, but I just want to vouch for you, for somebody who's not familiar with you. I was sitting, and I think it was actually at Greg Wells's wedding, who's a mutual friend of ours. He's one of the worship leaders at New Spring. And this is long before Greg worked with you at New Spring. And I remember sitting around talking with all of my friends who I'd gone through college and camp ministry with, and we were all getting ready to take youth pastor jobs. And I can remember multiple guys who were from the Clemson, Anderson area who were talking about you and talking about Fuse, which is a ministry that you used to lead in the context of New Spring, which is their youth group, and talking about, like, how you were the best they'd seen. And I know that that's probably not something that you take great pride in hearing or whatnot, but I remember that. And then my career in youth ministry, which was 7 years, my first 7 years in vocational ministry, The question was always kind of, well, how does New Spring do it? I was always interested in what you were doing, what your team was doing. So you've always been a good trendsetter, and that's why I wanted to have you on this show, because I wanted to just pick your brain and your heart about pastoring and whatnot. But before we do that, I have to ask, because I think for a lot of people, when they see you now, they see you and the teaching team, people like Clayton King, who's a mutual friend of ours, Dan Leanne, Meredith Knox, and yourself, and then a whole just, gosh, army of amazing Bible teachers and worship leaders at New Spring. A lot of people would be surprised to find out you're kind of a small town boy from close to where I'm at, Henderson County, North Carolina. How did you get from attending Furman on a baseball scholarship and thinking you were going to go home and take over the family construction business to being one of the lead pastors of one of the largest and fastest growing churches in the United States?
Man, I don't know that there's a simple answer other than sovereignty, God's kindness. And, I look back over that section of your life, and I'm 40 this year, and I just say, man, God gave me great parents. A dad who was a deacon and a mom who was a Sunday school teacher. If you grew up in the Baptist context, my father was a RA leader, which is like the Baptist Boy Scouts. Yeah. And I was in church all the time. And a lot of folks, have a different kind of church background and experience. And I look back over mine and I was really fortunate. I had great leaders, great youth leaders, great small group leaders, went to college to play ball. And my FCA chaplain was the guy who actually pastored me in college and got me to consider a ministry career. And so instead of pursuing the family business in law school and that whole deal, I ended up being asked to be a chaplain and got to Clemson, South Carolina, worked for the Fellowship of Christian Athletes for Coach Tommy Bowden and the Clemson Tigers. And caring a whole lot about athletes walking with the Lord got me into serving at the local church that I was attending, and that was how I got to New Spring Church. So that was kind of my entry into the world of ministry full time.
Yeah. Well, that's incredible. And Tommy Bowden, for people who don't know, I mean, he had quite a testimony too. I mean, the whole Bowden family, I think, really was really involved in FCI. I think I just remember that those names constantly popping up in that circle.
That's right. His dad was all about family and faith being a part of his whole approach to raising young men. And Coach Tommy had that in his DNA. And and if you talk to Coach Dabo Sweeney, he'll tell you that's where he got it from. And so I was around the football team when Coach Sweeney got hired into that role, and had the privilege of being his boys youth pastor at the local church. And as a matter of fact, this weekend I'm attending his middle son's wedding. So it's just been a really cool journey I've gotten the privilege to grow with our church and grow in my oversight pastorally, and don't take any of it for granted, and just try to be faithful in the midst of whatever's in front of me, man. And so I want to be a good farmer, be faithful with what's in my hand. And that's how I've gotten to where I am. Anyhow.
That's awesome. Yeah. Well, that's incredible. And, I'm not from here, but I'm a Tar Heel through and through, mourning the NCAA tournament. But I love Dabo Sweeney, and I think every believer should look at what Dabo's done at Clemson as a great hallmark for being able to have a witness in difficult places. Somebody who's listening, and especially if they are familiar with you, they might be confused. Like, a lot of what ATAP does is engaging with world religions and sort of, our big thing is Into the Dark. And so some people might be sort of like thrown off because they probably don't hear you, as far as I know, talk about world religions and things like that, that much. I know New Spring's, I mean, as big as you guys are, you're all over everywhere, especially in South Carolina. But the reason why I wanted to have you on is I've seen in you, throughout the course of time that I've already referenced, like watching you from afar, but then just also in the last few years, really helping to lead New Spring in a direction of really continuing with that mission of reaching the entire state of South Carolina. When you do that, though, you're going to come up against like everything, and you're going to come up against different worldviews. You're going to come up against changing cultures. You're going to come up against multiple generations. And so I wanted to talk to you and just hear your heart on pastoring, but specifically to a side of pastoring that I don't think enough lay people are even aware of, which is really the idea that like to be a shepherd, there is like some warrior mindset that we all have to have, that there is like, man, when you stand up to speak, to preach at New Spring, I don't care where you're at, but especially a large enough gathering like New Spring, where you might be talking to thousands of people over the course of a simulcast or recording, you're going to be talking to Gen Z, Gen X, millennials, boomers. You're going to be talking to people from various different ethnic backgrounds. And nowadays you might even be talking to people who are confused about sexuality and things like that. And you, as the person on stage or the person in the counseling office or the person who's, you know, leading even a business meeting, have to have a heart to reach all of those people and engaging all those people. As big as New Spring Inn is, and as wide of an experience as you've had going through youth ministry now to being on the lead team, what has that experience been like? I'd imagine it has to sometimes be disorienting, where you're thinking through like, oh man, we might have some people from this background in the room and a completely opposite background in the same room hearing the same message, and I have to pastor both of them. How has that experience been for you?
Well, I think you're really right, man. I think more because of the internet, there's no such thing any longer. Let me go on record. No such thing as the Bible Belt anymore. I think you can think out loud that, okay, I live in a context where everybody knows, and you can assume everybody knows Christianity and kind of the classic pillars of Christian faith and doctrine. And just as somebody who has done all of my ministry context has been in the Carolinas, I want to say that that's not the case. The presumptions or the Christian presuppositions are gone. And if you've got any kind of general Bible knowledge, you're probably ahead of the curve. And so, you know, when you're thinking about preaching or you think about ministry, you know, you see this in scripture, of course. You get Paul right in Athens, and that's like one version of Paul. And then you get Paul writing a letter to the Corinthian church, and that's a whole nother version of Paul. And I think sometimes you can, in your head, think, well, every Sunday I'm standing up and I'm talking to either the Corinthian church, so I need to be this way about my clarity, or I'm talking to the Areopagus in Athens. And I just want to say that you need to know that you got everything in front of you all the time. And so you've almost got to qualify everything you're saying because of all the different worldviews. And a phrase that I've been using a lot lately, just internally, and I actually don't think it's made it out on the platform, you'll probably hear it more in the next year, is I think we live in a Christianized context, but I don't think we live in a Christian context. And so while we have some habits and things that we do because we're in a Christianized America, i.e. Christmas break, that's Christianized, and that kind of an idea. But most people, even a lot of people who think they're Christians, they are just Christianized. And I think that's helpful for me in forming my sermons and forming my points. And we talk about that a lot because we teach in team. We're big believers in team ministry here at New Spring. And that allows us to kind of speak with one voice while using a diversity of voices to kind of come at it from a lot of different angles through the course of our ministry time. So that's probably the most helpful right now thought I have about pastoring, especially Gen Z and those that are coming up, because they didn't grow up with the formation of Sunday school like I did. Because of the seeker movement, a lot of people just kind of were really getting in spaces where they were hearing the gospel. They were hearing the Billy Graham kind of simple gospel crosstalk, but they don't have the formation. They've been found but not been formed. I think that's the biggest gap I'm seeing right now in pastoral work in general, is there's a lot of people that have been found, but they've not been formed. And so what does it look like to go through the process of forming as I shepherd and thinking along those lines? So I don't know if that gives you any handles you want to grab onto and roll with, but that's like my day in and day out working right now.
Well, and I don't think most people understand even too, like the fact that you've thought through all of that. You know, here's the reality, like unfortunately most Christians, and I guess fortunately because it's our jobs to think through this kind of stuff, but there is like this truth that you're saying, and that we live in this Christianized part of the world now. I've said like 100 times, it's just in my preaching and teaching, you know, we still live in probably the easiest time and place in the history of the world to be a Christian. And that's a great thing, but man, it's done bad things to us. And you know, you and I both pastor in this context where everybody, like you said, everybody thinks, hey, I'm Christian because I go to church or my dad's a deacon or I grew up in RAs, but they have this like lack of formation that you mentioned. And, you know, you came up through through Fuse, you came up through student ministry, and you were on really the front end of now what we, like you mentioned, Gen Z is how we typically classify it. How has it been formulating a message of spiritual formation and discipleship to this generation, which has come out of the seeker sensitive movement? They were born out of it. Us millennials, we were grown up in it as well. But they're really the first ones who are teenagers and early 20s. And really, I've seen, as I'm sure you probably have, there's a great spiritual hunger amongst Gen Z, but I feel like sometimes the church is almost ill-equipped to really help them along the way in discipleship. How have you and how have New Spring been tackling that?
Well, I'm not going to act like we've got it all figured out, because we don't. We're always asking hard questions there. But I think you're right to identify that there was a different way of doing church in the late boomer Gen X mindset than there mm-hmm. is now. And I think one of the pieces that I have seen a lot is whether you're looking at stats globally or you're looking at my context right in front of me, is that Gen Z, because of the disruption in culture over the last 3 years, COVID, over the last 15 years, just a lot of spin and what's real and what's not real, there is a desire and a hunger for something that has staying power regardless of what's happening and swirling in the culture. And so it's one of the reasons you see people running to things like high church and liturgy and, you know, the mm-hmm. Anglican denomination, for instance. And so for us, we've reckoned with the fact that there's a lot of young people that want to see things that can stand the test of time, that can stand the test of a changing of presidency, a changing of economic structure, a changing of, you know, whatever the huge swirl is. And so things that maybe historically, even when I was growing up, would have been considered old traditions, they're making a comeback, because if you're explaining the why behind their traditions, there's a desire and a hunger for, show me the timeless practices and why these things made it through, you know, the Enlightenment or this regime overthrow or this upswing in denominational change or in methodology change. And so things like just the simplicity of taking communion. Mm-hmm. Where classically in a Baptist light is what I will call New Spring, we might have taken communion once every quarter, a couple times a year. And now one of the things we do every single Sunday is we put communion in front of the people, because one, it shows folks that are watching online, which we're not at war with, that, hey, we're doing something in this room as a gathered, called out group that you're not necessarily getting to do sitting on your couch or listening to the podcast. Because we're a gathering of believers, but we're also able to show something that's been transcendent, that has lasted the test of time. And so that would be one example. There's a hunger for the transcendent, timeless practices of the faith that kind of are, again, they can even get beyond denominations, that are really the ecumenical things that we all agree upon. So that would be an example right now I see massive. That's happening, that when I'm talking to 20-year-olds or young married couples that maybe didn't grow up in church, or maybe they've been saved but not really been formed, that these practices, spiritual disciplines, whether corporate or personal, have real buoyancy and ballast for the faith of a follower of Jesus. So that's the kind of stuff that I'm talking about in terms of formation right now.
That's amazing. And I think you're 100% right. I've always thought it's funny how hard we work to make ourselves contemporary when our faith is ancient. And it's like kind of that's like one of the best things it has going for it. And you communicated it so beautifully. One thing, that I've heard recently, and you know, the church I pastor, is not close in size to New Spring, close in style though. We have lights, we have very contemporary music, we have a full band. I've been to New Spring's, many of New Spring's campuses, and I've seen the same thing. And I'm sure you've heard, like I have, people saying that, younger people, Gen Z, are rejecting the lights and the fog and the show in favor of something that they deem more genuine. Have you guys found that to be true? Is this generation coming up, are they seeing lights and, you know, the things that come with it as lacking, you know, a genuine motivation? Is there a way to do those two things in a healthy tension with each other, in your opinion?
That's a great question. I think the easy answer is to set lights and fog and high production over and against genuine authenticity.
Yeah.
And you can make a straw man very quickly and win. So I'll just say that works if you want to. But I don't necessarily think that those two things are antithetical. And I don't think you've got to put them in a false dichotomy to push them against one another. But rather, there's a way to be genuine and bring back authentic worship in amongst something that is actually framing it for our day. We're not at war with technique, technology, tactics. Those things are beautiful when they're used with the right heart and motive. But I think Gen Z is naturally skeptical, naturally cynical, and naturally jaded, and rightfully so. They've got zillions of reasons to be skeptical, cynical, and jaded. Mm-hmm. So that's their default setting. And if you don't acknowledge that, and then you throw smoke and fog and lights on it, then you're just dogpiling on their potential for being skeptical, cynical, and jaded. Right. Where if you instead use lights to amplify the right thing, the glory of God, use iMag and cameras to create opportunities for folks to consume it that are sitting 100 feet back. I mean, there's just some things you're just not going to be able to do with excellence in a way that folks can consume it if you don't use the technology. But there is a flippancy maybe perhaps that was a little bit too polished, you know, 10 years ago that maybe folks weren't thinking about. Make it bigger, brighter, and louder, and that was the win. Bigger, brighter, and louder is not the win. Amplifying your genuineness of motive and spirit and the timeless truth of the gospel, that's the win. Put it on the internet and using podcasts and technology to make it go further, that's the win. And I think they've got a good sniffer and they'll see that if they're looking for it. So, but you're exactly right. There's a revival spirit in the earth. And, you know, we're recording this podcast right on the back of some pretty cool revival moments, at least in our country. And it would seem that there's a revival spirit that says, give me an acoustic guitar and just give me authentic prayer. But I don't think you've got to put those things in dichotomy necessarily.
I agree. I think it is so interesting to me, and I've always kind of wondered what the large church mindset, because it'd be tough for you guys to, you know, walk away from that style because there's so. It's so much a part of what you guys do and who you are. And I've always thought that there's no reason for this to, you know, not be genuine. I can be false and misleading with an acoustic guitar and fluorescent lights just as easy as I can be with an LED screen. I've always kind of felt the same way. I think one thing that New Spring has going for it, and actually my church is as well. We, for quite a few years, we've utilized the teaching team method. We've contended and fought for a very long time, even at a small church. I mean, we have like 300 people, you know what I mean? And I've always thought when I see pastors fall, and we know that so much a part of what the world thinks of us has largely been decided because of these moral failings of pastors and whatnot. When I've seen this, I've always thought, man, I'm glad that I only preach every third week. But even that, Brad, like I still struggle with ego and I preach every third week. I serve with two other lead pastors. Do you feel like the teaching team or the lead team that you guys have, you know, helped to pioneer at New Spring, or just really any shared leadership has helped as a witness to the community as a whole that, hey, it's not just about one guy. Has that helped you guys at all in your witness and your testimony to your community in South Carolina?
Well, time will tell. I would like to tell you that that's our intent. So the motive behind it is to try to love well through transitions, whether positive or negative, if those ever happen. A man serves faithfully for 30 years and then retires, you know, praise God. If they're all by themselves, then that's going to always be a reset in a really hard way for a church. Versus if there is a little bit of a diversity of voices, a plurality of leaders, then you can celebrate well when the transition happens, but it doesn't feel like you're catching quite as much of a reset. Now, there are some difficulties to multiple voices. It's a lot harder to snap people into, you know, direction and vision, and here's what we're doing. It's a lot harder to lean on, you know, social media even, or personalities, gifts, charismatic gifts even. But I think in our moment in history, at least our effort is that we're guarding the hearts of, as Luther said, the idol factories of all of us from creating these little mini celebrity Christian weird idols that really do hurt when people either move on or fall. So, we also want to help people understand that there's only one hero, capital H hero, in this thing, and his name's Jesus Christ. And the Bible does a fantastic job of disreputing every human other than Christ. And so we just want to make sure we're doing our best to hold up the name of Jesus as well. That's why we've done what we've done. Really, 15 years ago, Jeremy, this idea of multi-site wasn't even a thing, So we've got this multi-site reality, and with that comes the potential of one individual to really help or really hurt. And so we just want to try to spread that load. Don't feel like it's good for any soul to have to carry over the course of time in the long run.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and you guys have incredible leadership. Obviously you're part of that, but as I mentioned, so many other names, and you guys have a great crew there. One thing that I saw you guys handle pretty well, in my opinion, and I think a lot of people, as we talk about the more touchy subjects that the church is having to learn, I feel like many times Western evangelicals, we're always like 5 years behind sometimes in how we learn to deal with things, that sometimes we learn from necessity. And really the last few years on issues as far as like diversity and like conversations about multicultural issues, things like that. And then as well as, a rising swell of LGBTQ issues. As I mentioned earlier, the pastor, man, we are at the center of that. Like like you've already mentioned, we're not bearing the entire burden for our church, but we are in a sense expected to help them figure this kind of stuff out. And I remember seeing a mutual friend of ours who works at New Spring, Charlie Betrago, who we were mentioning pre-show, is a wonderful man, extremely gifted worship leader, preacher, teacher, a songwriter. And he's really pioneered this Spanish night of worship that New Spring does. It seems like statewide. Has that been something, that has become part of the heartbeat of New Spring, is if, hey, if I want to reach this entire state, there's more than just white evangelicals in this state or people who, look like me and you, Brad. Like, what was the thought process there in deciding to make this huge church movement at least a little bit more multicultural?
Yeah. Well, if you want the real story, the real, the backstory on that in my heart personally was I came to New Spring Church as a white kid. Hello, not surprising, but it was actually a bunch of African-American football players that brought me to New Spring. This was the place that they felt comfortable. And so I was hired as a chaplain to try to pastor them. And I was just trying to get them into church. And where were you excited to go, guys? They were excited to go to New Spring. So that was my introduction, is I got invited by minority dudes that I was in discipleship relationship with to come to New Spring. That was 18 years ago. And so one of our values as a church, in terms of when we're looking at what we hope to impart to our kids and our grandkids, one of the five values for our church that we want to see, we see in Scripture, is that they would pursue uncommon unity. And we believe that's a biblical construct. That's not a that's not a CRT construct. That's not an American 2020, 2021, 2022, etc. construct. That's the reality of opening up our Bible and seeing Jews and Greeks. And that's the reality of looking forward through John's revelation of the new heavens and new earth. And he says in John 7:9 and 5:9, actually, that I saw every language, tribe, tongue, and that they're standing before the throne worshiping. So there's a unity. They're worshiping Jesus. They're covered in white, but there's a diversity. Mm-hmm. I'm hearing different languages. And so if that's the trajectory that we're on, there should be something in the reborn heart of Christians to pursue folks that speak, look, act different than me. And so that's really where the seed of this has come from. And we want to be on that trend line. Now, we don't want to be kowtowing to culture. What we want to do is we want to be bringing the culture of heaven. And you got to work hard in a cultural moment and narrative like we've been in over the last couple of years, but it's worth it to help folks see that we're going to be, English is going to be the minority language in eternity.
Yeah.
And so Charlie is, of course, a Spanish speaker, Venezuelan by birth. And in our context in South Carolina, we have a massive Spanish speaking population. And so we just want to lean into that when we can to pursue that demographic with the good news of Jesus. And Charlie's helped us do that. And so, of course, we also want to pursue relationships with the African-American community in South Carolina. I feel like that's a massive opportunity we have in our state. And we feel like that when we put on display on Sunday morning, a multi-ethnic, multicultural church, that we are actually showing a little glimpse of the new heaven and new earth. And that apologetic speaks to everybody that what you guys have here is different than what I feel in my school, what I feel on my timeline, what I feel in political ideology. This is the real deal. And it's apologetic to the community we live in. And so we desire to be a multi-ethnic, multicultural church, multi-generational church, because that's a natural apologetic to a world that's not any of those things. So that's where the seed of that comes from. And it's grown, and we don't get it perfect, but man, we sweat it and we work really hard and we're intentional about it as best we can.
Well, I think you guys are doing a great job. I see it. I see Charlie promoting it. And you mentioned, honestly, I hope it takes people by surprise that the idea that that would be an apologetic, because what's funny is you mentioned you don't want to kowtow to the culture. I'm sure it's been a struggle to disciple your staff, your people, to say, hey, we aren't like, sometimes we are going to act. It's going to seem like we're acquiescing, but really we're just being obedient. And do you ever feel like you're constantly riding a line as a leader between like these two opposite ends of the spectrum, where you say the culture wants us to bow down and do this, but then, you know, our hardcore, more, you know, we call it conservative, if you will, branch of Christianity is saying, no, we're not going to do any of that. And then here you are as a leader saying, no, we're going to try our best to reach our culture. And sometimes we're not going to make either camp happy. Has that been difficult and stressful and burdensome for your leadership to try and navigate those waters?
Absolutely. And I think it's worth considering, right? But, you know, what's really cool is that when you look at the Imago Dei on the lost person, there's something in culture right now that says we should celebrate people that aren't like me. And there's a natural thing that's going on in the culture. So you open up Disney or your Amazon, and depending on what month it is, it's going to be right there at the top of your, you know, what you want. Okay, so there's something in a person that desires to celebrate and lift that up. So the way I describe that is there's a desire for the kingdom with no knowledge of a king. And so they want the kingdom. They don't want the king. So my job is to take and subvert that and say, okay, I'll give you an example, that there's a celebration of this thing in America called Juneteenth. Right. All right. Well, we celebrate Juneteenth. We celebrate Memorial Day. We celebrate Thanksgiving. We celebrate 4th of July. Those are four American holidays. Contextually, they don't celebrate those in any other country. But I am trying to both exegete culture and exegete scripture. So in each one of those, our staff is going to figure out a way. Here's Memorial Day. You're going to see it all over social media, every church. No greater love is any man than this, that he lays down his life for his friend. Well, that's fantastic. Yeah. It's a great way to talk about Jesus. My job as a pastor, though, is to not get people to finish by throwing their crowns at the red, white, and blue flag. Rather see the sacrifice of many men and women throughout history in America that laid down their life and let that point to a higher throne, the King of Kings. In the same way, Juneteenth is another beautiful opportunity for us to do the same. There was freedom, and there was freedom that was purchased and bought and established, and the good news of freedom got to Galveston, Texas. And so now, just like God's heart, everyone who's been created in the image of God has been given dignity in our nation. And it took years for that to happen, but it did happen. So we can take Juneteenth and celebrate that, not because I'm celebrating an ideology and culture, but I'm using that ideology to open a door to a higher culture. So I'll tell you the best suggestion I've got for pastors out there that are trying to cross train this is take the weekends that are back to back. And I saw Dr. Piper do this for years, and celebrate both the sanctity of life, which should be a kingdom value for a Christ follower because of the doctrine of Imago Dei, right? That's easy. It's typically a conservative leaning value in American politics, and put it right up against Dr. King weekend, the very next weekend, celebrating the dignity of everyone created in the image of God. It's the same doctrine expressed in two different ways to classically two different ends of the political spectrum. And what we're telling folks when we highlight both of them is we're not about right or left. We're about a vertical kingdom that we can bring from heaven to earth, and we can show it as an apologetic in the way we do culture. And it doesn't let somebody just pull a, I'm a Republican Christian, or somebody say, I'm a woke justice warrior, but rather, no, I'm a kingdom of God ambassador here, and I can subvert any side of this thing. And Dr. Tony Evans is the gold standard of this. If you want to look to somebody who does this really well, Pastor Evans has been doing it fantastically on the Oak Cliff Bible for a long, long time.
Yeah, he's the man. And that's, there's so much wisdom in what you just said. But honestly, I think the number one question, and I think I think this is what I would ask, even if we weren't sitting in front of computers, and is it, what was the turning point for you where you stopped worrying about what man thinks of you? You know, because like what you just said, and I know you're going to say, well, I still struggle with that, and obviously we all do, but like what you just said is one of those things where you lay down at night some nights and you go, oh, everybody's going to be mad. I'm going to make everybody mad, you know, like, what was the turning point for you? And there's probably more than one, but like where you just decided, hey, I'm going to make somebody mad with this decision, or my staff's going to be, I'm going to have to disciple some of my staff through this decision. I might have to disciple all my staff through this decision, and you just said, I'm going to do it. You know, what was the turning point in saying, I'm going to lead this way because I feel like this is the most God honoring way to do it, and I don't care what man thinks.
And I really believe that it's because it's not my opinion. We have a phrase around here that we want the word to do the work. And so if you're going to argue, you're going to argue with an open Bible. And I think that there is, you know, beautiful doctrine in the Didache talking about the reason that Christians reject abortion in the second century. This is not an American deal. This is not a Republican deal. All right. That same doctrine, or let's lean into several of the patriarchs, the church fathers that, I mean, are going in, the cap daddies, the Cappadocian fathers, they're leaning in on slavery in the third and fourth century. I mean, they're coming as hard as you can come in a Roman context and preaching good news. And so the word does the work. So I'm not arguing this because I'm this kind of a person or that kind of a person, or this is my opinion. I am lifting it because I think the word of God requires it of a declarer and a herald. That's what I think. I don't think this is, if it was my opinions, man, I would be so much louder about some other stuff, because I've got opinions all day long and care greatly about them. This is not a Brad Cooper opinion. I believe this is a biblical conviction that every minister's got to lift. And I just think it's our time to be courageous with it. So that's really the way I justify it, is I can go home and go to bed at night because I'm at rest with the Holy Spirit on that one. I think it's in the Word of God.
Yeah. I love it. And I would even go so far as to say too, for those in Christian ministry listening, I personally, Brad, think that also the idea that you're not bearing the burden by yourself as the one pastor of a church, I do think that helps at least a little bit, that you can look at those co-laborers, you know, the fact that you're not saying, hey, at least they're not just going to hate me. Right. You know, it's like, and not that we are worried about opinions of man, but let's be honest, it's easier when we can look at a brother or sister and say, hey, having you here with me. And so I think, you know, even for those of us who are serving outside of the context of a mega church, is trying to develop leaders that can help you make those tough decisions, you know, and therefore make your ministries more fruitful and better. I think, like I said, I think you guys have done a great job at exemplifying that. One of the greatest issues right now on at least, especially a question that I think everybody in our part of the world is having to answer is, you know, what does the gospel have to say about this changing sexual ethic? Issues within the LGBTQ movement. We have, every time you turn on the news right now, there's questions of trans rights and things like that. How do you think, you mentioned earlier, I loved how you called the effort that a church goes to exemplify what heaven's going to look like, whether that's multicultural, and that could be expressed in everything they do. That's an apologetic. And I know that, you know, the apologetic has changed. We can't just go out and make logical arguments anymore, as important as those are. Really, Gen Z and this changing world around us is questioning the church on why we think our morality is the only morality, why we think the Bible or the one way to Christ is the one way of salvation. How do you think a pastor, a Christian, should be engaging in this conversation now, not just around the sexual ethic, but the idea that sometimes it feels like the ground is crumbling around us, that there is no truth to hold on to anymore. And, you know, you mentioned the Enlightenment earlier. I mean, this has been going on for a long time before now, but I think it's really getting to everybody's doorstep right now. My kids are having questions about this now. So a friend of theirs at school is confused on their sexuality, and my kid wants me to help him understand it. So as a pastor, how are you leading your people through these types of questions and conversations?
Well, I think it is the question, you know, and this is the one. There's a zillion questions that get to this one I'm about to say, that so it could come up anyway. And I'm a dad too, you know. I've got a 9-year-old, and I've got a first grader as well, and I've got a young man in the house still, in public school. Now my wife is the PTO president, and we've got a lot of Jesus followers at the school, and I feel like we're always one semester away from being doing something else, but that's where they are right now. So here's the conversation, right? Where does truth come from? And I think one of the things that Paul writes to Timothy, and he speaks very candidly, is that the church is the pillar and buttress of the truth. And so if the church does not articulate the truth, will not speak the truth, then the culture won't be able to see it. And there's no pillar, there's no buttress. So it's our job in kindness to hold the truth up. And I think what we see in the culture is a completely different approach to truth. And you guys all know this. You see it too. And it's the postmodern, post-secular humanism, reality, moral therapeutic deism, that truth is somehow go down in here, deep, deep, deep in here, and find it and bring it out, and then now live your truth. This is the truth. Versus that I was born into a world with a truth external, absolute and fixed, and that truth's going to go on when I stop existing in this kind of a construct, and that I'm born in submission to realities that are outside of me. Those are the two worldviews. And the Bible is the one that talks about the external, absolute, capital T truth. This is the conversation around scripture. This is why a trajectory hermeneutic is so dangerous. But I think if I'm talking about sexuality in general right now, learned a little bit from your late millennials and Gen Z folks. I actually think that the boomers and Gen Xers are scared here more than most, generally speaking. Sorry if that offends, but they're so worried to say clearly what the Bible states clearly. And they try to do more gradient and be more nuanced and winsome. Nothing wrong with nuanced and winsome, but there is some things the Bible is black and white about. And I think the Christian sexual ethic is one of those. And as a matter of fact, in the first 300 years pre-Christendom, the church won the Mediterranean because the Mediterranean was a sexually weary Roman pagan world. And I think that can describe our context right now as good as anything. Sexually weary, post-modernic, in world. And there is a sexual ethic that we have to offer in Christianity that is not, it's not boring. I mean, the stats on this are out the ears. Christians who in marriage have more sex, are happier in their marriage. I mean, the stats on this are everywhere. You just got to go look and stop, you know, taking the pill, so to speak. But the reality is when you offer up it's an ontological argument, right? That the sexual ethic of the Christ follower who gives themselves to their spouse for life in the construct of marriage, it's more fruitful in its actual ability to reproduce, and it's more fruitful in the joy and happiness and lack of anxiety. There's all kinds of stats on this. I think we can stand on that. And I think our Gen Z little brothers and sisters that are out there, they're way quicker to be clear on this and call mm-hmm. this out than the Gen Xers and the late boomers that are so nervous to be clear here. And so I just would mm-hmm. speak to a pastor, a communicator, and say with confidence, with love, show that there's a way. And Rodney Stark is one of the guys that records this beautifully. He talks about the Roman world. He's a historian that talks about the Roman world here. And he says, Rome was filled up with people who were greedy with their stuff and they were generous with their sex. And the Christian ethic flipped that on its head. Christians were generous with their stuff and they were greedy with their sex. And they gave themselves only to their spouses and it changed the world. And I think that we're in the same kind of moment now where our generosity and our sexuality are natural ethics that we can preach the gospel with, but we can't be scared to be clear about it.
Yeah. I think you're so right there, because I do think we have to do a better job helping the world understand, know that what we're supposing is the good life. Like, this is the best way to live your life. It's not just, this is what God's told us to do, so we do it. No, this is the best way. It's not just the only way, it's the best way. I think you and your team are a good example of how to do that in the context of a church culture. I know you'd quickly say, as you have multiple times in this talk, that, you know, you guys aren't perfect and obviously nobody is, but I think you're doing a tremendous job. And so for listeners who are in and around South Carolina, I mean, like, how many campuses do you guys have now? I lose count every time I try.
Oh man, we've got 14 right now. And, South Carolina is not one big metroplex. It's just a bunch of, generally okay sized places like Charleston, Columbia, and Greenville. And then everything else is kind of in that rural context. So that's what we've got right now.
Yeah. Well, and if somebody, you know, is in and around South Carolina, they'll understand this too, is that, culturally speaking, there's a big difference between Columbia and Greenville and Myrtle Beach and Hilton Head. And so New Spring is kind of a living, breathing example of contextualization of, hey, how we do it in Hilton Head might be different than how we do it in Columbia. So you guys are doing a great job with that. So if somebody's in and around the South Carolina area, please check out New Spring, whatever campus is closest to you. They have a really active and amazing online ministry, and Brad's on Instagram, and his account and New Spring will be tagged in it. The reason why I wanted to feature Brad and just New Spring in general is, in a world of mega churches, I think New Spring's doing a good job of showing us how to do this type of stuff effectively. So I appreciate you, brother. You're a thinker. You're certainly a scholar, pastor, which I can really appreciate. And you've made a huge impact on the kingdom. You've made a huge impact on my life, and this is really the most substantial interaction we've had. And so I appreciate you, and I hope listeners have been blessed. I'm sure they've been. So I hope you guys keep being blessed down at New Spring. It's tremendous to see what God's doing with you guys.
Thank you, brother. Keep up the good work. And again, I'm here to serve. So if I can help anybody or our church can out there, let us know. We'd love to shepherd well in our moment. So thank you so much for having me on.